So check this out. Recently, I received a screenshot from a friend regarding a book that he was reading. And in this book, it had this section from some psychologists called Failure to Thrive. Now, when I saw the word thrive, it immediately got my attention, because if you are familiar with my philosophy, my life's philosophy at all, it's this. There are three different ways you can live your life: sinking, surviving, or thriving. And I don't believe that we're gonna be on level three, which is thriving, all of the time in every area, but I do believe it's possible to be on level three most of the time in most areas. That thriving should be the rule, not the exception. That thriving shouldn't be the anomaly. Sinking and surviving should be the anomaly. That's my life's philosophy. That philosophy is informed by my theology. Like, everybody has a philosophy upon which they live their life. I'm not saying you have to have mine. You can have yours. I'm just sharing with you what mine is, so that you know why when I saw this section of the article, this section of the book, I was like, yo, I gotta look into this a little bit more. Failure to thrive. And as I read the screenshot, I saw why he sent this to me. I want you to catch this. If it's cool, I just want to read a portion of it for you, because it was really revolutionary and eye-opening for me. And so this whole idea of failure to thrive, and this is what the writer says. It says, psychologists have began to speak on what is perhaps the largest mental health problem of our day. Check this out, guys. It's not depression or anxiety, at least not at clinical levels. It's languishing, a failure to thrive. Now, let me tell you why this jumped out at me, right? Years ago, when I say years ago, several years ago, I came across this research project that some therapists and life coaches did in an attempt to come up with one word that described the dominant disposition or the dominant head space, heart space that the people that were in their focus group, and their hope was the people in the focus group were a representation of the people in America. So they did this research project, right, to figure out, okay, what is one word we can come up with that describes the emotional or mental condition of most people? And this is what's crazy. This is what's interesting. The word languishing was the word that they used. So now you've got another author who's done his own research and is utilizing the same word to describe the dominant disposition of people. Now, check this out. As a spiritual leader and as a coach, I can concur that most people that I'm serving, either in the spiritual space or the entrepreneurial space, would not use the word thrive to describe the majority of their life. Now, they probably wouldn't use the word languishing. Like, when I came across the word languishing, when I came across the first research study I was telling you about, I was actually doing doctoral work. So I was finishing up doctoral work. I think it was actually my last class before I just went exclusively into writing. But I didn't even know what languishing meant. So I want you to check this out. I want you to listen to this. Here it is. Languishing is the condition of someone who may be able to function but has lost a sense of hope and meaning. Yo, I'm gonna read this one more time. I said, languishing is the condition of someone who may be able to function but has lost a sense of hope and meaning. Listen to this. Languishing is not the presence of a mental illness. Now, the author's not dismissing mental illness. He is not saying that mental illness doesn't cause languishing. He is saying there is a type of languishing that is not a result of mental illness. And you may wonder, where does it come from? I'm getting ready to talk to you about it in just a second. So he says, languishing is not the presence of mental illness. It is the absence of mental and emotional vitality. You know what vitality is? It's life. It's energy. It's zest. It's zeal. It's enthusiasm. So he's saying, this isn't languishing. It isn't about the presence of something. It's about the absence of something. It says, it is a weariness of the soul that causes an inability to delight in life. It is inner deadness. It is the opposite of thriving. It's the opposite of flourishing. It is Henry David Thoreau's greatest fear when he says, when I came to die, he says, his greatest fear is that when I came to die, I would discover that I had not lived. Guys, listen to this. This is so important because I want you to know that languishing is normal, but it doesn't have to be your normal. Yo, I live by this principle called the principle of exception. And here's the principle. What happens with them doesn't dictate and determine what happens with me. See, that principle, some people who misunderstand it, they'll be like, yo, Darius, that's arrogant. That's not arrogant. That's not a declaration of superiority. I'm not saying I'm better than. That's a declaration of distinction. I'm saying I'm different from. Right? It's saying that you can't, I am not going to allow you to determine my future based on people like me's past. It means that I won't let you look at people my gender and then tell me what's possible for me with my gender. It means I won't let you look at people that are my age and tell me what's possible for me my age. I won't let you look at people who come from where I come from and tell me what's possible for me where I come from, based on where I come from. There are always exceptions. There are always anomalies. And I want you to believe that you can be one of them. I'm going to say that one more time. There are always exceptions. There are always anomalies. And I want you to believe that you can be one of them. I don't want to live a life of inner deadness. I don't want to live. I want you to catch this. So languishing doesn't mean the presence of deception. It just means the absence of joy. It means the absence of delight. It means that zest, that spunk, that zeal. And I'm not saying we're going to have it all of the time, but if we're honest, most people don't have it most of the time. And we can. And you will. So I started asking myself, because I'm a pragmatist, man. So I started asking myself, yo, Darius, why? Like, there's research that supports this experientially on the spiritual side and on the entrepreneurial side, Darius. You see this happening with people. You see it happening straight up. That people are languishing. Why? There are a number of different reasons, man. There are a number of different reasons. I'm sure. What I want to share with you is one that I think is like the little fox that spoils a vine. It's a little thing that causes big trouble. It's extremely important, but it's often overlooked. I'm going to tell you one of the primary causes of languishing. I see this, guys, with a lot of people. Primary cause of languishing, listen to this, is overwhelm. Most people have no idea that they are overwhelmed and they are overextended. Some are overwhelmed financially. There's not a lot of financial margin. Some are overwhelmed relationally. There are too many relational commitments. Some are overwhelmed professionally. They've got way more work than they have time. Some are overwhelmed emotionally because they're carrying so much emotionally. They're making emotional deposits and they're receiving emotional withdrawals. People are withdrawing from them emotionally, but they're not getting deposits. People are languishing because they're overwhelmed. So what I want to do is really quickly, if you'll allow me, can I give you four keys to just overcome overwhelm? Because we can't fix the languishing part. Languishing, I believe, is the fruit. It's not the problem. It's the evidence of a problem. So to fix it, we've got to go deeper than languishing, right? To figure out what's causing the languishing. And I'm going to tell you. It's overwhelm. So I'm gonna give you four keys to overcome overwhelm. And so here's the first thing. The first thing is this. The first thing is evaluation. So when I say evaluation, this is what I mean. I don't mean evaluating your life first. I mean evaluating your priorities. When your priorities are clearer, decisions become easier. Come on. When your priorities are clearer, the decisions become easier. Priorities, when I say priorities, I mean values. So for most people, there's a disconnect between their proclaimed values and their actual priorities. So if I say, yo, what's first in your life? They're like, my health. I'm like, okay, was that a priority? No, not really. What's first in your life? My family. Was that a priority? Nah, not really. So there's got to be an evaluation. Like, am I clear on my values? What is most important to me? Okay. Now, once there's evaluation, you get clear on the priorities, there's got to be prioritization. It means that you actively have to take a step that you don't overwhelm passively. You got to be active. Like, if you're just waiting for a day to come and things get less hectic, that's probably not very likely to happen. I'm just telling you. Or if it is, I don't want you and your thriving to be at the mercy of that. When you and I have a response ability, when God's given us the ability to respond, to take responsibility, prioritization. So it means not just having priorities or having a schedule, but scheduling the priorities. I practice something called sacred rhythms. My rhythms themselves aren't sacred, but my rhythms protect those things that are sacred to me. My relationship with God, that's sacred. So I'm going to protect the rhythms that cultivate that relationship. My relationship with my family, that's very important to me. So I'm going to protect the rhythms that protect that relationship. Stewarding my health well, that's important to me. So I'm going to protect the rhythms that actually create that. And I'm going to prioritize that. That's a decision. So, evaluation, prioritization. Number three, elimination. It's okay to eliminate some things. It's okay to say these things are good things, but they are not great things, or they were good things, but they're no longer good things for me in this season. And so sometimes you got to eliminate responsibility. Sometimes you got to decommit from some things. I think that's another teaching I got to do on decommitment. But sometimes it's okay to decommit. Sometimes you even got to eliminate goals, man. What do you mean? Like, it's okay to reevaluate your goals in different seasons and say, this is no longer important to me. It was important to me when I set this goal, but now I've evaluated my life and this is not as important. And I don't see myself as a quitter. I see myself as someone who's a winner, who refuses to be loyal to something that doesn't matter to me anymore. Got me? So there's prioritization, there's evaluation, there's prioritization, there's elimination, and then finally, there is organization. It means that I am intentional about organizing my life and reorganizing my life based on the season that I'm in. That's huge, guys. Organizing and reorganizing my life based on the season that I'm in. If I do those four things, I'll overcome overwhelm. And if I overcome overwhelm, I can move from languishing